This week on Making Contact.
We do have rights, but here our rights are null and void.
Violence against women pervades every culture. Sources say that one of every three women is abused at some point in their lives.
My life has been at risk many, many times. He could have killed me, and the police wouldn't do anything.
In Latin America, sexism and impunity contribute to violence against women. But the region is also home to powerful female voices and effective movements for the advancement of women.
Las mujeres somos protagonistas.
We women are the protagonists or the leaders of the changes in our lives.
I'm Pauline Bartolone, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. In the South American country of Bolivia, violent crimes against young women have risen dramatically. Between 2008 and 2009, cases of violence by boyfriends, husbands, and fathers went up by 10% in the capital, La Paz, alone. Almost none of these cases have or are likely to face justice. But a new law that may pass by the end of 2010 would give a sentence of up to 30 years prison time for the murder of women. It's being dubbed the Femicide Law. It's seen as a revolutionary first step in combating the rising rates of violence and as one way of gathering data and combating misogyny in this traditional South American country. Roxandra Guidi has more from La Paz.
Patricia Brañez is a stoic and straight-talking sociologist who focuses on women in a country largely dominated by men. She's holding a cigarette with one hand and with the other leafing through a binder full of numbers and newspaper headlines. She works for the Centro de Información y Desarrollo de la Mujer, or CIDEM, Bolivia's largest women's rights organization. CIDEM is the only institution to be monitoring cases of femicide, and Brañez says those numbers have been going up steadily since 2004, year after year.
Se determina que, por ejemplo, el 2009 han habido 98 feminicidios.
We've determined that in 2009 there were 98 femicides in our country, and this is only by looking at press clips.
Sabemos que existe subregistro como en todos los países y que seguramente este número se
puede. We know that the numbers must be much higher. We're estimating around 160. Most of these cases haven't been registered by any government institutions, so to us this clearly means that the Bolivian state and society have come to accept violence against women as the norm.
But why have the numbers gone up so much in the last year? Brañez doesn't have the answer. All she knows is that the data is alarming and that there are plenty of cases in La Paz and the neighboring slum city of El Alto that can illustrate this. Gladys Apaza's home is in the poor working-class neighborhood of Villa Victoria. A month ago, her father came home from work and found the 20-year-old's body, her little nephew, Nilo, laying dead next to her with another gunshot wound. Her ex-boyfriend, Gary, a military officer, admitted to his family that he killed Gladys. But then he fled, and now neither his parents nor the military will reveal his whereabouts. Viviana Apaza is Gladys's mother, who's been visibly distraught by the crime since it happened.
I was selling toys at my stand downtown when I realized that I had 8 missed calls on my cell phone. I answered the last time and my husband said to me, Gladys is dead, Nilo is dead, and I almost died myself. That instant, I left everything and came home. When I got here, our home was full of police officers, journalists, photographers. They told me to go upstairs and didn't even let me see my kids.
Viviana Apaza says she can now see the warning signs she missed. Gladys had broken up with Gary in January, but he refused to accept it. He'd become extremely possessive and jealous and repeatedly asked her to hide this from others. He flaunted his military background and told Gladys he couldn't marry a girl like her from a poor family. Aside from playing these painful scenes over and over in her head for the last month, Viviana has been consumed by the fact that the family can't afford a lawyer. On the other hand, Gary's family has 4.
¿Cómo es posible que cuatro abogados defiendan a un criminal.
How could it be that four lawyers defend a criminal and we don't even have one? I am a poor, simple, hardworking woman, and my daughter was too. I once told Gary, there are women that will line up to be with you because you have a swagger and a uniform. You'll even find women that are much better off than my daughter. So why do you insist on being with her?
Not all cases of violence against women are motivated by jealousy and possession, but Gladys's case is certainly one of many others that have come to the attention of the Bolivian police.
Fortunately, the Bolivian police forces are doing everything in our power to investigate crimes, no matter whether the victims are rich or poor or powerful or not.
Colonel Rosario Alvarez Claros is the chief of the Crimes Division. Faced with the sharp rise in violent crimes against women, he says machismo must be to blame. But Alvarez can't explain why the military isn't helping the police in solving Gladys's murder.
We're doing the investigations but haven't had much success. We've contacted the military command to see whether Gary's still active or his whereabouts, but they won't comply.
The leadership of the Bolivian military is so powerful that no one can face up to them, not even the Ministry of Justice. But for the last 6 months, the institution has been trying to address this kind of impunity by introducing a new law. It's called the Ley de Feminicidio, and it marks the first time in the history of Bolivia that gender crimes will be prosecutable by up to a 30-year sentence. Irma Campos is in the newly created gender department, and she says she hopes the new law will change Bolivian society.
Normalmente lo que se ha habido es el tema del homicidio como tal.
Typically, we've criminalized homicide or murder, but this definition of femicide is new in our country because we wouldn't give that much importance to the killing of women. So we're just starting to give it the focus it needs by giving it a name. Now when people hear femicide, they're starting to ask, femicide? What's that?
Most Bolivians seem puzzled by the term feminicidio and the eminent law, especially since no outreach programs have been designed to inform the public about the need for this law, nor its aim. Meanwhile, there are only three women's resource and legal centers in La Paz and El Alto, with more cases of violence than they can handle. Valentina is among those cases, a poor woman in her mid-30s with a violent husband who refuses to grant her a divorce. She's come to this women's center to explore the possibility of a lawsuit, the only way out of her abusive marriage. Valentina says she's skeptical that a femicide law will do much to reduce society's denial of gender violence.
Can you imagine how violent this man is that my life has been at risk many, many times? He could have killed me, and the police wouldn't do anything. What's more, I'm not afraid of him anymore. I know how to defend myself. But now I'm into the third lawsuit and have no chances to win. So what do I have to do now? Pay the judge? You know, laws are beautiful, but here in Bolivia, they're not applied and they don't make a difference.
But one bright light in all of this is that the rising violence has galvanized victims and the Bolivian press around the issue. The term femicide may be controversial, but most members of the Bolivian parliament seem to feel something needs to be done, so the law is almost sure to pass. For Making Contact, I'm Ruxandra Guiri, El Alto, Bolivia.
In some cities, you can get away with murder more easily than in others. Killing women with impunity can be easier still. In Ciudad Juarez, in the Mexican state of Chihuahua, there have been nearly 500 known cases of femicide in under two decades. Untold numbers of women remain missing. In our next story, independent border reporter Joe Ritchie speaks to several women in Juarez about what it's like to live in the most violent city in the world and what they're doing about it.
You might think Juarez is a city of powerless women, but there is no shortage of feminists here. Anita Cordero lives in western Juarez in a neighborhood called Barrio Popeye.
Who is the law? The man. Who makes the laws? The man. The president, the attorneys, the lawyers. Who are they? The man.
At 70 years old, Cordero is a relief agency of one, a single mom with relations from Zacatecas to El Paso. In her working years, she waded the Rio Bravo daily to El Paso to clean offices and feed her six kids. Luckily, Chata, as Cordero is called, qualified for residency in El Paso thanks to the Immigration Reform Bill of 1986. A strong, stubborn woman, she still chooses to live in Juarez and opens her home to travelers from her native Zacatecas. Cordero's assessment of local and state government is especially harsh.
Why are things the way they are? They're all drunks, potheads, and womanizers. They think the world is theirs, even though they behave like cockroaches. No, there's no law. There's no law.
Cordero's feminism was born in her own home with an abusive husband. 10 years ago, he burned their daughter's house down. When asked if a case was ever brought against him, Chata repeats, "There is no law." Revolutionary fervor is a big part of the cultural history of Juarez. Radicals, feminists, and working-class women yearn for new leaders to defend the dignity of women there and everywhere.
No se puede confiar porque es un gobierno machista.
That's Dolores Dorantes. She's a former reporter. She describes what it's like to live in Juarez every day.
Aquí los grupos armados llegan a una fiesta.
Here, armed groups show up at a fiesta and kill everyone at the fiesta. It's to simply sow terror. They are acts of terror, but not from civil society against the government, like what happens in Europe, but the state against the city, against the citizenry.
Dorantes and others tell me that the growing ruins and surrounding environmental wasteland has a psychological effect.
One day you see a historic building you've known your entire life. The next day it's gone.
Destrucción emocional constante.
There's an emotional destruction.
Devastación absoluta.
Many have picked up and left, up to 700,000 out of a population of 2 million. Estimates of up to 100,000 Juarenses have moved to El Paso.
La mitad de la comunidad ya no está.
Half of the community is gone. Those that had a little bit of money, those who felt threatened or who were kidnapped, have fled. But also, many, many people have died in Juarez.
The killing of women with impunity and subsequent generalized killing in the streets, compounded with widespread joblessness, has destabilized the city, says Dorantes.
Pero hay una cantidad enorme de gente desempleada.
There are an enormous quantity of unemployed people with dead children living the pain, hating the city, hating what has happened to them, not knowing why this has happened to them, and yet they still have to stay and live there.
At 36 years old, Dolores now works to improve the lives of women in crisis. She's the current coordinator of DEMAC, Documentación y Estudios de Mujeres, a women's studies and research center in Juarez. And she's the author of Dolores Dorantes por Dolores Dorantes and teaches narrative writing skills through DEMAC to women ages 7 to 70. Dolores works to restore the rights of one woman at a time.
I've been asked why I only work with women. Because men have already appropriated writing. Any man can write anything he wants. Not so for Mexican women. They make to-do lists. They don't feel they have the right. They don't know they have the right.
DEMAC, the organization Dolores is a part of, tries to restore that right and to rescue another side of Mexican history.
We're launching a project called Reading My City so that women can wake up to what's happening in the city.
There are other organizations in Juarez that seek to empower women. Ciudad Juarez's first rape crisis center was founded in 1999. Casa Amiga initially focused on sexual violence, but now helps women and families who have experienced any form of violence in their lives. Irma Guadalupe Casas is the current director of Casa Amiga.
With so much social violence and so much human loss, we've opened our doors with psychological help to newly orphaned kids. We have grieving circles for kids and therapy for bereaved women who've lost their partners or a brother, and parents who've lost their children also. But our real strength is with intervention to domestic violence.
Casas was born and raised in Juarez. She's seen her city go from boom to bust in a globalized economy. Many factories move to China and bring what Mexicans call la marea roja, the red tide of Chinese products to the Mexican market, especially in urban areas. Wages for working mothers are pushed down.
Right now there is a serious job shortage. There are not enough contracts. Wages are minimal, 500 pesos a week, about $50 a week to keep afloat and raise a family.
The undeclared war in Mexico creates layers of anxiety for young working mothers.
And there's nowhere to leave your children if you work. Nowhere where a mother can say, here they'll be safe, here they'll get fed and cared for. We see mothers leaving their kids on their own without them asking why they're leaving them home alone.
Casas reminds us that women in Juarez suffered gender-based violence before NAFTA, and points to the culture of impunity as a key culprit.
The best security the government can offer is our rights. We do have rights, but here our rights are null and void. The defenses women have on the social level are with organizations like Casa Amiga or the Women's Network, with whom we are demanding our rights. Certainly on a personal level, there are self-defense classes, etc. But if there's impunity, none of this will work. So long as there's impunity, our situation will not improve.
While the situation for women in Ciudad Juarez is not expected to improve in the short term, feminist organizations like Casa Amiga and DEMAC are working in small ways that matter over the long haul. For those who stay, for the Anita Corderos, Las Dolores Dorantes, for Irma Guadalupe Casas, and for making contact, this is Joe Ritchie.
Joe Ritchie is an independent researcher, reporter, and translator. His border reporting receives support from the Nation Institute and the Puffin Foundation. We'll be right back with more about violence against women in Latin America. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. We now return to Protagonists for Change, Women Against Violence in Latin America. Indigenous women are especially vulnerable in Latin America. Many don't have access to education, medical care, police protection, or transportation. But recently, there have been some legal and cultural advances for women in Venezuela. That's according to Indigenous health organizer and journalist Hayariu Farias. She spoke at the 2010 U.S. Social Forum in Detroit, Michigan. She said President Hugo Chavez has initiated some of these judicial protections, but women in Venezuela are the protagonists of change in their own lives.
Many women from my community have been domestic workers. But in the last 11 years, with the revolutionary transformation process, the consciousness of women has grown tremendously. And nowadays it's very unusual to find why you women, or why you is her culture, why you women who continue to work as domestic workers because they are too busy, they're very involved in the political transformation process. They've really gotten to know themselves as women, and they have found themselves to be tremendous leaders.
Es impresionante.
And now we are the ones who run the communities.
Los hombres,
that men have felt like they have so much rights and privilege. They felt they have felt even that they had the rights to steal our dreams.
Y comienzan a poner obstáculos.
And they try to put obstacles.
Y luego la respuesta, por supuesto, es la violencia.
And sometimes respond with violence.
Sin embargo, en Venezuela,
and we have made enormous judicial advances in terms of defending women against violence, domestic and other forms of violence, and it's really made changed the situation.
Un marco jurídico que protege a la mujer.
And we consider in the laws defend women against both physical and psychological violence. It would have been inconceivable several years ago for a woman to be able to take her male partner, to take a legal action against her male partner for verbal abuse, verbal aggression, saying that she's worthless, that she's stupid. That is now against the law in Venezuela.
Y ahora la mujer puede ir y denunciar todas esas.
So traditionally, those of us who have worked on this issue, traditionally we've been able to, we've said to women historically, someone that mistreats you in any way does not deserve to be with you. Now we have a legal backing for that. And one of the ways that we're formalizing the work around women is to have created a ministry for women's issues.
Y el ministerio.
And this ministry has a number of different institutions with specific focuses that are related to it. And we as indigenous women also have a specific office for our issues within the women's ministry and a women's office within the indigenous ministry.
Además de eso, se han creado
there are special courts that have been created to hear domestic violence cases, not only to protect women victims of domestic violence, but also to children that are involved in the family. And so not only now are men being sent to jail for domestic violence, but there's also an integral therapy treatment for women and children victims of violence.
Pero además, en cada una de las comunidades,
and we're looking at ways also to work with women in raising their self-esteem and finding a lot of success in this work that women, when we can help improve women's self-esteem, they get involved in other productive, in the society in a productive way, but that also we need to continue to work with men addressing violence in other ways. Because we have a tremendous, a very strong legacy of machismo, sexism, that we are dealing with.
Y me impresiona mucho.
I've been to some of these, to some of the workshops, the self-esteem workshops with women, and oftentimes the therapist or the psychologist will say, well, women are also responsible for perpetuating sexism within the family, and this is like really shocking to women.
Que tenemos que darle a nuestros hijos una educación.
That we are also responsible for raising our children in a way to respect women and respect equality.
Y toda esta capacitación, pues, ha incidido.
That women's role and women's participation has advanced greatly across the country, and in many of the most important positions in the country, in ministries, etc., are now held by women.
Nuestra ministra para pueblos indígenas también es mujer.
Our minister for indigenous affairs is a woman.
Sí, ciertamente aún hay realidades.
So we have a lot of challenges before us, but we're also making great advances.
Porque en nuestros pueblos es muy difícil.
Because for women to participate, it's a challenge even to come to a forum like this, because women carry the weight of the household.
Pero tengo mucha esperanza en que esto.
But I have a lot of hope that this will continue to change, because we're already in a different situation as women.
Y la mayoría de las.
And the majority of the community organizations, and now the community councils, which is a new form of grassroots political organization in Venezuela,
están liderados por mujeres.
Are being led by women.
Entonces, bueno, son realmente unas super mujeres.
So they're like super women, all of them. They get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, feed their kids, take their kids to school, come back to the house, feed their husbands, go to work, and then take on the leadership roles in the political transformation of their communities and the political organizations.
Y hace algunos meses,
to give you an example how we're starting to feel that power is really going to the people in Venezuela and coming to women.
Unas mujeres,
and one of the examples to show how women are feeling like they can take on more power, they were building a new factory of an aloe plant, like an aloe bottling plant near us, and a group of women went to the plant and said that if with their extra profits they should build a little chapel to worship a local virgin that the women in that region are devoted to.
La empresa,
and the company was about to leave the town and without having built the chapel because they said they had no money left.
Y ellas, cada una agarró,
and so a large group of women each took a virgin and went to the company to protest.
Y lograron que se le construyera su capilla muy rápido.
And they quickly had their chapel built.
Es una muestra de,
I think it's an example of empowerment.
También hay casos.
This title of this workshop, Sisters Crossing Borders, moves me, and I relate it to my own work in my community.
Porque las mujeres Wayuu,
because Wayuu women have had borders placed on us by both Venezuela and Colombia.
Y recuerdo que hace mucho,
when I was about 9 years old, I was playing with some other children in my community.
Y las mujeres Wayuu,
and there were a number of Wayuu women who came back carrying merchandise in their skirts, was a traditional way of having come back across the border from between Colombia and Venezuela.
Y eran perseguidas por la Guardia Nacional.
And they were running away from the National Guard.
Y en ese momento,
and the National Guard caught up with them near where we were playing, and we witnessed the mistreatment of the women by the National Guard.
Hoy no son capaces.
And today they can't lay a finger on any of those women because we pull out the Constitution, our new Constitution.
Eso quiere decir que las mujeres, lamentablemente, pues.
So we continue to have a number of challenges in this crossing border. The commerce crossing borders are one of them, but it's been necessary for subsistence. At the same time, people are gaining more tools to their own legal advancement and defense. And it's touched my family closely because now my sister is involved in the court system, the juvenile court system in our region.
Me tiene informada de,
and now both, and that these courts, so the courts that her sister is involved in have to do, are related with the advancements of women and the courts against domestic violence. And also the Attorney General. Y la Fiscal General
de la República.
The National Attorney General and is a woman as well. So legal advancements that are being really pioneered by women.
Y yo pienso ya para culminar que,
so we have made these tremendous advances again and I think that we deserve it because our country itself has the name of a woman.
Yes, yeah.
Thank you.
That was Venezuelan Indigenous Health Organizer Hayati U. Farias, speaking at the 2010 U.S. Social Forum in Detroit, Michigan. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to KGNU Radio, Tim Butler, Professor Joe Heyman, Pablo Montiabo, and Polo Arellano. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.